those poems. I'm sure if you were listening carefully, and I know everyone was listening carefully, you heard a certain word repeated in the two poems. It was the word carry, carrying each other. The dad carrying his son, all of us carrying each other to cross that Red Sea. But at my age, and you'll see that from my hair, when I first thought of we get to carry each other, something else came to mind. Not one of these beautiful poems, but actually a song from U2. Some people know it, right? I'm not going to try to sing it, but I will share with you that I had a brief fantasy that two of the other members of the Chaplains on the Way community, whom I know some of you know, one of them is Randall, and the other is Milton, and they both can sing really well, and I had a brief thought that when I referred to We Get to Carry Each Other by U2, the two of them could just pop up and do one of those little surprise, maybe in harmony, because they can do that sort of thing. But unfortunately, neither Randall nor Milton could be here this morning. They send their regrets, and I'm not going to sing it. I'm just going to go back to the poems and carrying each other. In those two poems, we carry each other. No critique intended of U2, but I think in the poems it's more profound and more provocative. The dad carrying the son, maybe that's a sort of an easy image. We can see that. We can imagine it. But are we really willing to do that with each other? And I want to emphasize today, I don't mean this in some particular political way. There's not some policy that I'm pushing up here, even though I am an ex-lawyer. I'm talking about the heart. I'm talking about this essence of carrying each other. And it's the same in that Red Sea poem, by the way, which we discussed on Wednesday at our service. We had both of these poems sitting out on the common. It was really cold. The wind was actually blowing our papers away and blowing our candles out. But we still huddled together, and we read these two poems, and we talked about them. And we talked about this idealistic, provocative idea, this invitation of having no enemies. That's in the Red Sea poem. And we talked about whether that might be possible on the world stage, or even in our daily life. I mean, if you pause for a minute, you might think, do I have enemies? Even just that driver who cut me off on the road or something small like that. I think it's honest to admit that we do. But this poem, these two poems together, are inviting us to consider, what if we didn't? What if we had no enemies? What if this time crossing that Red Sea, we carried each other? And this is a question not of politics this morning, but of what our faith or our wisdom tradition might have to say about this. And that radical kind of idea or instruction can come from a poem or a story. I thought I would share one brief story. It comes from this book. I brought it as a visual aid. It's written by two Buddhist authors, so I think the title is interesting. For those of you who know a little bit about Buddhist teachings, it's called Soul Food. So it's clearly, I hear laughter, that's good. It's an interfaith book written by Buddhists about soul food. And so it's a collection of stories from lots of different traditions. And the one I wanted to share with you is kind of long, so no worries, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I just want to give you the gist of it. It's presented as a true story of two young kids, an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old who lived in Illinois. And the 8-year-old, the little girl, got really ill. She had a blood disease that was life-threatening. And they looked and looked and looked to find a blood donor so that she could get a transfusion or a replacement of blood that would save her life. They could not find one and could not find one until they finally realized her 6-year-old brother actually did have that same rare blood type. And so the mother and the minister and the doctor all sat down with this little boy, this little 6-year-old, to ask him if he'd be willing to donate his blood to save the life of the sister. And they were sort of surprised that he didn't answer right away. He didn't just say yes. He said, I'm going to have to think about it. And 6-year-olds can be really thoughtful, I guess. But after a few days, he went to his mom and he said, yes, I'll do it. So the doctor brought the two children to the clinic, and this is the part I'm not sure medically how this worked, but this is the way the story goes. He put them on cots next to each other, and he drew the half pint of blood from the little boy, and then he started to infuse the sister with it, and in a few minutes, she actually already started to look better. She had more color in his cheeks. The doctor, or the little boy, calls the doctor over, and asks him very quietly a question he wants to ask him privately. He says, "Will I start to die right away?" Because you see, that's why he had to take a little while to think about it. He didn't really understand. He thought that what he was being asked to do by giving his blood to his sister would end in his death. But he still said yes. And that's a radical story, a radical instruction. We're invited really just to sit with that, sit with all of the heartbreak, uncertainty, and whatever arises in us when we hear that somehow, in some way, we're called to carry one another the way he did with her. So holding all that, I want to turn back around to our meditation too. All of these themes, they all come together. Kaun Yamada said to us, "We come to love everything with immeasurable depth, and we know that all things completely love us." And he says, knowing that, resting in that knowledge, it opens a life of infinite gratitude. And that's really the core of what I want to say today. I have some poems and stories to tell you and lots of details to share, but just to jump ahead, I want to emphasize that my infinite gratitude, and not just mine, but a shared infinite gratitude, because I know people in this room have this in their hearts as well, a gratitude for the partnership between this community of First Parish and the community of Chaplains on the Way. They're separate and they're together. There's overlap, there's love. We're showing that in this room together. And truly, we do carry each other. That radical vision that's in the poems or in this little boy's mind, it's here. It's here in that kitchen right behind me. It's here in Whitcomb Hall. It's here in the bathrooms. And I do mean the bathrooms. That's how actually Chaplains on the Way came to First Parish originally. It was COVID. It was early days. I was with Chaplains on the Way, but Reverend Becky was the one leading us, and a man named Hoosty. And the Chaplains on the Way community, including Becky and Hoosty, realized that what they were doing to address the public health problem of COVID did not in any way take into account the reality that people are unhoused. Because the instruction was, stay safe, stay in your home. Imagine how that lands on the ears of someone who doesn't have a home to be safe in. And it comes down to every detail of human life, including being able to go to the bathroom. During COVID, McDonald's was closed, Wendy's was closed, the library was closed, all the places where you might normally be able to go as a person out in public and go to the bathroom, couldn't access those bathrooms. But this church, even in all the fear of those early days of COVID, opened up the space to folks who needed it for the warmth and for the bathrooms and for the kitchen for food. So that was one source of my infinite gratitude for this partnership. I want to look forward as well. The big holiday that's coming up besides Diwali, being this time of November, is of course Thanksgiving. And I want to dwell a little bit more on gratitude because of Thanksgiving. Gratitude, caring for each other, carrying each other, community, family, chosen family. It's all connected, you say. All these virtues reciprocate and co-create each other. So for Thanksgiving, a little pause on Thanksgiving, I thought we could start with gratitude, and then we could fold in some related virtues, patience, empathy, and faith, and then return to gratitude. Gratitude. Let's start there. I saw this Tumblr meme the other day, and again, I'm revealing my age. I'm Gen X. I don't know if Gen X people generally look at Tumblr, but I happened to see this. There's this little poem. I'm going to read it to you. This poet says, "I like to pretend I already died and ask God to send me back to Earth so I can swim in lakes again and see mountains and get my heart broken and love my friends and cry so hard in the bathroom and go grocery shopping 1,000 more times. And then I promised I would never forget the miracle of being here." I don't know anything about this poet on Tumblr, but I immediately thought of some Buddhist wisdom, because that's my own faith background right now. There's a little phrase I actually had. People know me, know I have this tattooed on my arm, just to remind myself every day as best I can, each vivid breath. You know, can we have that level of gratitude in each moment, in each breath? It's harder than it sounds, right? But some days I am grateful just to be here, just to be alive. So that notion of being here and being alive takes me to my second set of virtues I want to talk to you about today, patience and empathy. What keeps me alive on my daily bike commute to Waltham is patience and empathy. And I'm thinking about a particular moment every day in my bike ride. Any of you who drive around here might remember the intersection of Waverly Oaks Road and Trapello. Can you close your eyes for a minute and picture that, some of you? I'm still new to Boston, I think, so I can't even remember which road is which, Waverly Oaks and Trapello, but I'll tell you, it goes straight up. There's no side space at all. There's just that nice woods there, and the road, the two lanes, and then you need to turn left at the top, and it's up a hill. So it's really tricky as a biker. You have a couple choices. You can ride in the lane that goes to the left, but if you do, you're slowing down the cars behind you. And I can tell you from experience, if you slow down a car for like a microsecond, they do not like that. They get mad. I will not tell you some of the things I've had shouted at me out windows on my bike. So don't really want to go in that lane, even though it's probably where I'm supposed to be as a biker. I go on the right-hand side, and then at the top, once it's all quiet, I switch over, and then I turn left there. But that means that there's like this much space between me and the cars going by, and it's honestly, it's scary every time. It's the woods on this side and the cars, and sometimes the trucks with things sticking out of them. It's worrisome. So that's tough for me. But I'm a driver too, and when I get near bikes, I get real nervous. When it's narrow like that, it's hard on me as a driver too. And so my point here about patience and empathy and what keeps us alive, keeps me alive coming to Waltham, is we have to be patient with each other. We have to try to imagine the reality of the other, their struggles, their story. What's it like for a biker trying to do that intersection? But what's it like for a car to try to do that intersection? And I don't mean to be flippant about this by comparing me as a biker and my little dramas with the cars to any kind of othering that might be happening on the world stage. But there's something at its core that is overlapping, the need to have patience and empathy. And because that happens, or has happened so far, those of you who pray, please keep praying for me to make that intersection every morning, because it's a little scary every day. But I arrive in Waltham, grateful and alive, thanks to patience and empathy. For what? For what? It brings me to my final set of virtues I wanted to link together: gratitude, patience, empathy. The last one is faith. I arrive in Waltham hoping to be part of some caring for each other and carrying each other. And over again, I do. I can have faith in that, because I've seen it happen over and over again. I have faith, for example, looking forward, that the Thanksgiving brunch that we're gonna hold together, I'm looking at all y'all, some of you have some time free on your Thanksgiving morning, in Wickham Hall and in the kitchen, we're gonna gather together from 9 to 11, and then the very next Monday, the 27th of November, we're gonna start being here together every single morning, Monday through Friday, all the way to April. We'll have access to those warm bathrooms and the delicious food and the companionship that Reverend Megan mentioned. And I'm gonna be honest with you again about something. It is damn hard to organize that. And I'm not maybe a very good organizer, so someone else might be able to do it better. But for me at least, and maybe for anyone, it's hard. You have to make sure you have enough food, but not too much food, because that refrigerator is not that big. Some of you know that. You want to have enough people, but honestly not too many people, because sometimes people feel like, well, why am I here? Somebody's already made the coffee. So you try to get that right balance, and it's not easy. That's not me complaining. That's just me being honest. And I'm being honest because what I want to do is show how that relates to faith, because we've been here for a couple years now doing that winter program, and we also do on Wednesdays in the summer a breakfast in that kitchen. And the same thing, are we going to have enough eggs? Are we going to have enough people to cook them carefully so as not to set off the fire alarm? Touch and go. But the thing is, not once in all those days have we not had enough people to make that time together happen. Not once have we not had enough food. We've always had enough food and enough people to be together to do this loving thing that we want to do together. So I have faith for this year too. I can hardly wait, honestly, for it to get started, and not just because it's gotten so cold outside. I'm ready to be grateful on Thanksgiving and for all the many mornings to come. All this gratitude and patience and empathy and faith carries us forward to that infinite gratitude that we can share together. That's what's going to help us together. First Parish and chaplains on the way, everyone we know and love and don't yet know and are about to love, that's what's going to help us care for each other and carry each other. So, thank you.